Yadrichalabhasantrishto Dvanvatito Vamatsara Samasiddhavasiddhocha Kritvapina Nibhajate. He who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A Krishna-conscious person does not make much endeavor even to maintain his body. He is satisfied with gains which are obtained of their own accord. He neither begs nor borrows, but he labors honestly as far as in his power and is satisfied with whatever is obtained by his own honest labor. He is therefore independent in his livelihood. He does not allow anyone's service to hamper his own service in Krishna consciousness. However, for the service of the Lord, he can participate in any kind of action without being disturbed by the duality of the material world. The duality of the material world is felt in terms of heat and cold, or misery and happiness. A Krishna-conscious person is above duality because he does not hesitate to act in any way for the satisfaction of Krishna. Therefore, he is steady, both in success and in failure. These signs are visible when one is fully in transcendental knowledge. Hare Krishna. This chapter of Bhagavad Gita is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. Here Krishna is explaining to Arjuna the symptoms of a person who is experiencing his eternal relationship with Godhead. Because he is satisfied within that relationship of Krishna, therefore, he is not attached to the results of his actions in this material world. When a person is devoid of Krishna consciousness, then the only substance of enjoyment they have comes through their mind and their senses. And this world is a place of uncertainty. Practically anything could happen at any moment to anyone. Therefore, such materialistic state of consciousness is always subjected to endless miseries. Can any of us count how many ways there are to suffer in this world? It's innumerable. At any moment, anywhere, if things are just right according to our expectations, then we can find some temporary happiness. Otherwise, Bhagavad Gita explains, the conditioned soul is hankering for that which he or she has not attained and lamenting over what one loses. And in the interim period, there may be some time where we actually achieve something. But even in that, there is always fear of losing it. Because as soon as we have anything that's valuable, people will be envious of us, and people will try to take it away. If you have good reputation, then people will try to slaughter your reputation through all kinds of blasphemies, nasty rumors. If you have wealth, Competitors will be there to try to conquer you. Thieves will be there to try to steal away your wealth. A few years ago, I was in Paris. There is a museum called the Louvre. Have you been there, Jamuna Mataji? Jamuna Mataji has preached Krishna consciousness in practically every part of the planet. So when we were there,
such a beautiful place.
I was seeing. At one time, it was the palace of one king and his queen. And they built it so nicely. It's huge. It's enough for practically a whole city to live in. It takes hours and hours and hours just to walk through. And every part of the building is a masterpiece of art. So he would invite so many other kings and noblemen and princes and entertain them by playing music, giving them wonderful living conditions, fine foods, intoxicating beverages. And actually his purpose was just to show off how great he was. The fountains in the front, the gardens are acres and acres in size, beautiful chandeliers. And everyone come and just talk about how wonderful this person's property was. But actually, nobody appreciated him for that. Everyone was simply burning in envy. What a miserable condition. You're trying to impress people, and the result is just the opposite. People don't like you for it, they hate you for it. They envy you for it. It's like here in Bombay, if you have a nice car, you're thinking, why do people have nice cars? Because they like to impress people. But as you're driving down the street, people may externally appear impressed. Oh, very nice, nice car. But in their heart of hearts, unless they're a very, very close relative or friend, who really don't care what kind of car you have, they'll love you anyway. But the other people, they'll say, oh, very nice. But in their hearts, they're thinking, why do you have this? Why not me? May you crash. It's human nature. So sure enough, the same people he was entertaining and trying to impress, they created a revolution and they killed him and cut off the head of his wife. Hare Krishna. What is the use of such a beautiful palace if you don't even have a head to see it with? That is the material world. We make so many arrangements to impress other people, but by our material arrangements, the people we try to impress simply hate us and envy us. What are devotees impressed by? They're impressed by humility, by a spirit of service, of devotion. And those qualities, they impress Krishna. They enrich the soul. So Krishna is explaining it here in Bhagavad Gita that we should not strive and work hard like asses simply to try to create a condition to enjoy in this material world. Because you cannot enjoy that position. The wealthiest people in the world are no happier than the poor people. I have told before the story of when I was hitchhiking in Thailand without a penny to my name. And one of the biggest, most famous television stars of America picked me up in a Mercedes limousine.
Pretty big, big car.
And I was sitting in the back seat with him, and he actually had to have a little telephone to talk to the driver. The driver was so far up. And the whole way, he was telling me what a miserable life he was living. Because he saw I was a devotee. He didn't know what a devotee was, but he saw I was some sort of a religious person. And at one point, he said, I was living with the biggest movie stars, politicians, musicians in all of America. Any party they had, I was there. And I'll tell you something. I was making, he told me, $20,000 a day for several years, just as his basic salary. How much is $20,000 in rupees? 9 lakhs a day. And then he was making so much other money from other appearances he was making. And he was number one show in America for many years.
Very famous.
He said the most beautiful women in the world were co-starring on his show. And they all became his girlfriends for that week. Hare Krishna. And he had a beautiful house. One in Hollywood, one in Beverly Hills, Universal City. They were all paid for completely. He said, and I'm miserable. And all these people who come on television and smile with their flashing teeth, they're all miserable. I know them all. It's all a show. Deep inside, they're lonely, they're insecure. They know nobody loves them. Everyone's just trying to exploit them and use them. Wherever I would go, people would recognize me and chase after me for autographs and try to shake hands with me. And that was very exciting for a while. But then I came to the realization, nobody loves me. Nobody cares about me. It's just their sense gratification to meet somebody like me. So then he actually started crying. And he said, Swamiji, I want to be like you. I asked him, are you sure about that? He said, yes. I said, I'm on the side of the road hitchhiking, not knowing how I'm going to get to Bangkok, and you're picking me up in a limousine and you want to be like me? He said, yes, because you have some peace in your life. I could see it. I have no peace. Then he looked out the window and there were some simple peasant people with those little hats that go like this, and they were on their knees picking rice from the ground. He said, I'd rather be with them than all these big politicians, Hollywood stars and musicians, because they're real people. They're not trying to be something that they're not. Then he looked at me with desperation in his eyes and said, Swamiji, is there hope for me? And I said to him, you are a very special person. There's great hope for you. And then tears came from his eyes, and like a little child, he said, really? Do you mean that? I said, yes. You've understood the futility of material life, and you're seeking something higher. You're actually a very rare soul. And he said, thank you very much. Anyways, we spoke for what happened is during the ride, this beautiful brand new Mercedes-Benz limousine broke down in the middle of these rice paddy fields on the highway.
and it was overheating. And the chauffeur said, every 15 minutes we have to stop for 10 minutes to cool the engine. And there were these little cars, something like ambassadors, these little cars, cheap little cars and motorbikes, they were just zoom, 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 passing by us. And we're sitting on the side of the road. And he said to me, what is the use of this Mercedes limousine? I said, this Mercedes limousine is very nice because we're going to have about a 5-hour Qatar. Which we did. 5 hours. It was very nice. And in the end, he took Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and was desperate. So whatever arrangements we make for material happiness, if we develop a little bit of realization of reality, we'll be able to see through the facade of Maya. And in the association of devotees, we can understand what is real happiness. Real happiness is to love Krishna. And even in our immediate state of life, we can experience a glimpse of that love of Krishna through the association of his devotees, through the chanting of his holy names, through the hearing of his message, through Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has declared that the greatest treasure is the treasure of bhakti. And there's no money that can buy bhakti. It is free for one who simply has a sincere heart and one who is willing to repose his or her faith in the truth. Lord Nityananda Prabhu was freely distributing Krishna Prema through Krishna Nam. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his beautiful song that the only price he was asking for this great treasure was our faith. There is nothing more precious than faith. And in the wrong association, Maya will steal that faith from our heart. We should protect our faith with more attention than we protect our bank balance, our families, our own bodies, and our own lives. We're very attentive in these subjects. But they will perish anyway in due course of time. But faith in the Vaishnavas, faith in Guru, and faith in Krishna will lead us to eternal love, eternal satisfaction. Therefore, that is real wealth. And Bhagavad Gita is teaching us how we could always remain disentangled from the unlimited illusions and intricacies of material bondage if we keep our mind fixed on this goal. Bhakti Vinod Thakur says in that Prasadam prayer that the senses are a network of paths leading to death. The word network is very interesting. What is the work of a net? That is network. The work of a net is to trap you. And nets are designed in such a way that the victim does not see it. until it is trapped. It's like you see at Chopati Beach, the fishermen, how they fish with these nets. They just throw the nets in the ocean and they just let them sit there. And the stupid fish, they just swim right into the net. If they knew it was a net, they wouldn't swim into it. But they don't even know it's there. They just go right into the net, and then the net does its work, network, and they're trapped. Hare Krishna. It's no accident that all of these television stations are called networks. Because they trap us unexpectedly. But Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to live in a spirit of devotion and thus never be entangled by the networks of Maya. Today is the 19th marriage anniversary of Kunja Bihari Prabhu and Maru Priya Mataji. And on this occasion, they have called us together to their home to have this nice satsang program. Now, we see there's a sannyasi and many very stalwart, renounced, strict brahmacharis sitting here. What business do they have coming to some wedding anniversary celebration? Because in Krishna consciousness, we understand the substance of the motivation which motivates people to do what they do. And when a person dedicates his human birth to the service of God, which is so very rare in this world, that's glorious. When a husband and wife come together to share their lives for the purpose of helping one another to purify their hearts, to raise their children in a spiritual environment, when they come together to serve Krishna, to serve the Vaishnavas, this is a very rare and glorious offering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We see in their house very beautiful deities of Gaura Nithai and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. Very nice sadhana. Not only do they perform their occupational duties in a very honest and exemplary way, but also they come to the temple practically every day, eager to chant, worship the deities, and render service. Always eager to serve Vaishnavas, invite them to their homes. Devotional service in any varna or any ashram is the perfection of life. Therefore, sincere and honest devotees are not so concerned with simply the external appearances, but they are concerned with the aspiration that a person has in life. If people are living by the regulative principles according to their varna and ashram, with the motivation of devotional service, that is worshipable by everyone. In Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, there were many great personalities in the Grihastha ashram. In fact, tomorrow is a very holy day. It is the appearance day of Sri Advaitacharya. So I'd like to tell some little story about Sri Advaitacharya.
how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though he was the greatest of all sannyasis, he would take great pleasure in stealing the dust from the lotus feet of Advaitacharya and placing it on his head. He was considered the king of the Vaishnavas, as was his wife, Sita Thakurani. When the two of them would come together to cook for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it was a glorious pastime. One time in Puri, Advaitacharya invited Lord Chaitanya to his home for prasad that afternoon. And he and his wife were cooking together. And Advaitacharya was thinking that whenever Lord Chaitanya comes, he brings at least 10 or 12 sannyasis with him. And after he eats, the sannyasis get all the remnants. But we want to serve him very, very personally and also taste the great remnants of his prasad. So they were thinking in this way, cooking. And just when it came time for prasad to be served, there was a massive rainstorm. The whole Jagannath Puri became pitch black. No one could see anything anywhere. No one could go anywhere. But where Lord Chaitanya was, the sun was out and there was no rain. So he came to Advaita's house and they served him nice prasad. And then he began to offer prayers to Lord Chaitanya. And the prayers he was offering was the prayers that Indra offered Krishna after the Govardhan Puja. The Lord said, "Why are you offering these prayers?" "I know. It was by your desire that all these rains have come. Even Indra is conquered by your desire." So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he accepted the worship, accepted the devotion of Advaita in such a unique and special way. And how Advaitacharya raised his children. One day, a Brahmin, sannyasi, came to the house of Advaitacharya in Shantipur. Advaitacharya was very happy to receive him. He offered him a sitting place and said, "Please accept prasad." The sannyasi said, "I have a question I want to ask you." Advaitacharya said, "Please take prasad, then we can discuss any questions you have." "No, I will not take prasad until you answer my question." "What is your question?" "Who is Keshav Bharati and what is his relationship to Lord Chaitanya?" Advaitacharya began to think about this question. He thought that I can answer it either from the external point of view or from the internal point of view. Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth. He has no father, he has no mother, he's unborn, eternal, the source of everything, but yet he is known as Devaki Nandan, the son of Devaki, because he appears in this world as Devaki's child. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is the guru of everyone. All knowledge emanates from him only. But in this world, he has accepted Keshav Bharati as his guru. So if I'm going to discuss with him, I should first begin with the material side before going into the deep spiritual subjects. He said, Kesha Bharati is the guru of Lord Chaitanya. You already know this. Why do you ask? As soon as he said, Kesha Bharati is the guru of Lord Chaitanya, the little child of Advaita Prabhu, whose name was Achyutananda, he was only 5 years old. He came running into the room. He was clothed only in the four directions. Due to playing, his body was covered with dust. He started to laugh in anger. He cried out, Father, Father, what have you said? Did you really say that? Do you mean that? What has come out of your mouth? If these things are coming out of your mouth, I could understand that Kali Yuga has come. You have been covered over by the illusion of Maya. That same Maya that deludes Brahma and Shiva has now bewildered your intelligence. How could you say such a thing? From Lord Chaitanya's pores come all the innumerable universes. And in each universe, the Lord lays all alone with no one around in the Garbhodak ocean. From him, a lotus flower stems from his navel, and Lord Brahma is born. Lord Brahma is the original child of the Lord. He doesn't know who he is, where he is, what he's supposed to do. He's utterly bewildered, looking in all directions. In that condition, he performs tapasya. He surrenders to the lotus feet of the Lord and engages in devotional service. Then the Lord reveals himself to Brahma, empowers Brahma to create the universe, and then imparts unto him transcendental knowledge. Brahma instructs Sanat Kumar, Sanak Kumar. He instructs Narada and other great souls. And through them, disciplic succession, transcendental knowledge is received. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the source of all transcendental knowledge. He is the guru of all gurus. How could you say that he has a guru? You are my father. You are my Shiksha guru. Why are you speaking these false things? When Advaitacharya heard this, he began to weep in ecstasy. Tears flowing from his eyes, he cried out, Son, son, you are my father. I am your son. You have come to teach me. I have committed a great offense to you. Please forgive me. I will never speak this way again. When Achyutananda heard his father apologizing and praising him in this way, he put his head down in great embarrassment. Meanwhile, the sannyasi was watching all this, and he bowed down at the feet of Achyutananda, the five-year-old boy, and bowed down at the feet of Advaitacharya, and began to think within his heart, this boy is very intelligent. He knows everything. As the father is, so is the son. Then he bowed down and left that place. Meanwhile, Advaitacharya, he began to take the dust from his little son's feet and all the limbs of his body, collect it and spread it all over his own body. He was embracing his son, covering his son with tears of love. And then Advaitacharya, with his son in his arms, began to dance through the entire house in ecstasy, chanting the holy name. At that very moment, Lord Chaitanya came to the door. Sri Advaita Prabhu offered his prostrated obeisances and gave the Lord a sitting place and worshipped him with great affection. He offered prayers to the Lord. Then little Achyutananda came running in the room and he offered his obeisances. Lord Chaitanya picked up that little boy and embraced him. In fact, he would not let the child leave his chest. The Lord bathed this little boy with the tears of his own love. Vrindavan Das Thakur explains that as Advaitacharya was dear to the Lord, so was his beloved child, Achyutananda. Because he was raised in such a spirit of love and devotion by Sita Thakurani and Sri Advaita Prabhu, this child had imbibed the spirit of pure bhakti. No one was more dear to Lord Chaitanya than this child. And later on in his life, he became the most dear disciple of Gadadhar Pandit. Sita and Advaita together had no other mission in their life than glorifying the Lord, serving the Lord, and serving the devotees in perfect harmony. This is a wonderful example of what marriage life should be and how glorious a Krishna conscious marriage could be. In fact, one of the greatest of all renunciates, Srila Haridas Thakur, he was the very best, most intimate friend of Sri Advaitacharya. Years before the narration that I just told to you, they were living together in Shantipur and Fulia. Every single day, Advaitacharya would invite Haridas Thakur to his house for prasad. Every day they would sing together and dance together. And together they prayed that Krishna would descend in this age of Kali to establish personally the Harinam Sankirtan movement. So close they were. Advaitacharya was living in a very nice house with wife and children, and Haridas Thakur was living nearby in a cave. The only people who he shared his cave with for some time was a gigantic, venomous serpent, Hare Krishna. That serpent was so poisonous that just the vapors from his mouth created such a poisonous environment that nobody could even stay in the cave for more than a few minutes without burning in their flesh and their eyes and their lungs. But Haridas Thakur lived there 24 hours a day with that snake, completely unaffected, because his mind was immersed in the pure nectarine sound of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on the full moon night of the month of Phalgun, Haridas and Advaita, on the bank of the holy river Ganges, they saw everyone chanting the holy names. Because it was an eclipse. And they began to pray to the Lord, may this eclipse never end, because everyone is chanting. And within their heart of hearts, they could sense that the Lord had appeared. And together, embracing, they were dancing in ecstasy. So this is a wonderful example of how devotees, the most austere renunciate
and a very, very successful householder who eventually had wife and six children, how intimately they were united in respect and affection in serving the Vaishnavas, in serving the Lord, and in performing the Sankirtan of the Holy Name together. So on this occasion, we take the opportunity to show our appreciation for this nice family, for their sincere efforts to struggle to become Krishna conscious in a city of Bombay where there are so many temptations, so many distractions, so many reasons and excuses to sell our souls to Maya moment after moment. But because Srila Prabhupada has given this great gift of bhakti to all of us, we all have the great opportunity to share it with one another and to inspire one another. And it is for that reason that we have come today, whether you know it or not. Hare Krishna. We must learn to protect each other from the temptations of illusion, because they are everywhere, around every corner and halfway down the block. Maya's waiting for you. But the association of devotees will always protect us, because in that association, Krishna's service and Krishna's name will always be prominent. Prabhupada wrote, "The only safe place in the 14 worlds is where the devotees come together to chant Krishna's holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama." Thank you very much.